What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome back. Day two, LA. Jack, amazing long-ass day yesterday. Then we get to start today with, one of the most clutch players in the history of the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of different nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
All I know care about is the seven rings.
Right.
Welcome to the show, Robert Horry.
Thank you, my brother.
We appreciate
Big bro.
You, man.
Big
Thank
bro.
You. Thanks.
I feel like this interview is going to have to cut the line, so we're going to drop this the first day of the finals since we're talking to someone who was 7-0 in the finals. What is that? You know, when you think about the hierarchy and rings and ring talk, you were someone who has seven first and foremost, but you're also 7-0 in yeah. those situations. What comes to mind now? You have a chance to sit back and look at stuff like that.
And first of all, I just say I was blessed to play with a lot of great fucking talent. You know, you think about it. One of the best big men ever. I started my career out, and it was Hakeem Olajuwon. And for me, coming out of college, you look at all the teams. Most guys were like, I just want to get in the NBA. I was like, where do I want to fit in where I can win a championship? And I was so fortunate to go to Houston because that's exactly what they needed, a small forward. And then to play alongside Dream and Vernon Maxwell, you know, two of the greatest competitors that play the game, was a great learning experience for me. So I look at that, and, you know, all the other teams I played for, the one common denominator was great big men.
Uh-huh.
You know, think about Shaq, Tim Duncan. Mm-hmm. And if you said right now, name the top five big men, I play with three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's who? You play with three of them.
Well, Dream's number one by far. Okay. We don't like to talk. Nobody wants to talk about it. I think you have these guys who are quiet. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Dream, you know, he's a really quiet guy. You can't get him to do much, to say much. So we kind of veer away from him. Mm. We don't talk about him. But to me, if you look at what he put together, you know, defensive player of the year, MVP in one season, mm-hmm. All-time leading shot blocker, you know, those things that you look at his history and what he's done for the game and where how he started the game. You know, this dude didn't play basketball growing up. Mm-hmm. Went to U of H.
Imagine
where
that.
They yeah. went, you think about it, we all went to college where they're going to teach you. U of H, they just rolled a ball out there and yep. he went to work. Mm-hmm. And so I think what his body of work was just incredible. And he's just a good dude too, man. That's what you have to think about, a good dude.
And people don't understand, you play with all of them, so your opinion is valid. You've been on the court with all of them.
With
yeah,
them.
One with all
yeah,
of
one
them.
With
so,
them
yeah,
too.
You got to respect that.
That's dope. Fatherhood, you recently got kicked out of a game, joined the club for cussing at a ref.
I didn't curse. I didn't
oh, you
curse.
Didn't?
I didn't. That's the craziest thing. I said, yo, ref, you suck, man.
Okay.
I said, call the blocking call. And
well, you should have cussed. If they going to throw you out for suck, you should have
cussed. Make it worth it, huh?
And that's the crazy part. People like, he's like, he went to the cop, and the cop was like, what did you want me to do? That's not my job.
Right.
And then he went to the AD at the school.
So stop the game.
Yeah, and he got mad. I said, oh, you mad at me because I say you suck? Right. I said, well, good job. And he tossed me out of the game.
Really?
And so the AD was outside talking to me. He says, you know, I apologize. He said, I said, can I have my money back?
Right.
He was like, I can't do that. I said, well, next game I come to is free.
Right.
And he says, okay, we'll do that. Yeah, but I love watching my son play in high school, man. You know how it is when you can watch your kids and watch them try to follow their own path, their own dream. You know, they won state championships, yep. So it was a great run. You know, for me, I was so mad that I missed the game to go to state champs because they played Corona Centennial. Everybody knows how good Corona Centennial is. But because I'm a part of the Harvard Westlake fan. We step up in there and beat them by 20 in their building.
Mm,
that lets you know destiny was in their path.
Where does fatherhood, but also giving your son game, how do you balance that line?
You know, I have a great son. He comes to me for advice.
Okay.
You know, like sometimes dads want to come out and say, oh, you're going to do this, this, and this. I'm like, yo, just sit down, let's talk. What do you think you need to work on? Where did you mess up in this game? And he's like, okay, Dad, I fucked up because I didn't shoot this ball. I didn't shoot that ball. He said, I should have did this. And he says, oh, tell me how I should have gotten. And I show him little tweaks because my son's a very intelligent player. You know, you got to go to Harvard Westlake. And so I just tweak a little things here and now. But I also think that the people I put him in the path with have helped him a long way. Like I do got like Zach now. I know, you know, Zach trains Reeves has started working with my son because I say, yo, I can't talk about dribbling. That wasn't what I was good at. But I can tell you footwork and how to shoot it. And so, you know, you have to pass it along. So that's one thing that I've learned about Father. We all don't know everything. So don't be afraid to step outside the box and ask somebody for help.
I'll be the first one to send these motherfuckers somewhere else. Same thing. We're going to do it together.
Yeah.
Need some help.
Andalusia, Alabama, that's how you say it?
Andalusia. Are you from Spain? It's Andalusia.
Andalusia.
Yeah.
Talk about growing up in South Alabama.
Man, you know, it was hard. I know a lot of people talk about how racist was and, you know, how racism is. You don't know racism until you get to Alabama in the South, where certain streets we couldn't walk down. Even growing up, I was one of the best baseball players in my city. And I don't make an all-star team because there was a situation where a ball rose to right in front of the coach. And I said, throw the ball back. He said, boy, you come get this ball. And I was like, shit. And I stood on first base. I don't make all sides that did. And it was and it's just crazy. And then what they fail to realize is in back then is if the team that wins it, which was our team, we won it every year, it was all black, had three white kids on our team, and the two white kids that were on our team was brothers, and they were the richest white kids in town because their dad was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we playing this game, we had to play an all-star game, and I don't make the all-star team. I told my coach, I'm pitching today. We beat them mugs 32-3. And this is their all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that moment on, they canceled that moment because they knew they were wrong. They knew they fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went on, it just is one of the little things. Even like our cheerleaders, we were only allowed three black cheerleaders on our team, and one of them was the coach's daughter, so they had to make that exception. So it was little things like that, but it made you stronger, it made you smarter, it made you be aware of your surroundings. It's one of the things that, like, my wife laughs at me about now, because when I go places, I'm always looking. And I'm like, you know, there's only like one black person in this restaurant. She said, why do you always know that? I said, because some shit go down, me and him gonna link up. That's just how it is.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
you know, and she don't, and she's like, why you? I said, well, because when you grow up in Alabama, you got to be very careful in the restaurants you go to, because people just start eyeballing you. And then next thing you know, fights break out, and you're going to get blamed for it. But you got to make sure you get about that bitch alive and make sure you got someone to have your back.
Man.
So when did hoop come into play? And then there's two questions. When did hoop come into play? And was there any NBA players you looked up to?
Man, my brother got me into hoop. My brother was the second best player in the state of Alabama behind Chuck Person. But he did not want to play. He did not want to play basketball. And so he's the one that got me into it. And then growing up, you know, South Alabama, and you live in your mother, your aunt, your brother, your grandma, and your grandfather in one house, and you got one TV. My grandfather, when he wanted to watch TV, watched what he wanted to watch. Yeah. And that was going to be...
The Westerns?
It was wrestling. That's all he watched. And then my grandmother watched stories. So that's how I became a Days of Our Lives fan, because when I come home, I had to watch what she wanted to watch. Mm-hmm. But... for that, though, it was just it was great growing up. I grew up a Magic Johnson fan, and I love Magic. I used to, you know, have a Magic Johnson poster in my room in college, and then I kind of became a Scottie Pippen fan, because as you grow and you learn your game, you try to pick out players that are similar to your build. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, this is why I want to take some from him. And then at the end of the day, I realized, well, shit, those two guys like to dribble. I don't like doing that shit. So I just try to be me. And that's one reason I wore number 25, because when I got to high school, my high school coach was like, what number you want to wear? And I said, I want to wear 32 so I can be like Magic Johnson. He's like, nope, you're not having that number. And I'm like, why? He says, because you need to be your own in person. You need to be your own player. You can learn from him, but be who you are. And he was like, when's your birthday? August 25th. You're wearing number 25.
Yeah.
That's how I got my number. Yeah.
It stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You stayed home for school, Alabama.
I didn't want to.
You didn't want to?
Uh-uh.
Teammates with Latrell Sprewell, talk about that experience. Yeah.
I wanted to go to Georgia Tech, because growing up in Alabama, if I say Alabama, the first thing you think of right now, Nick Saban and football.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Nick Saban wasn't there, but it was still football. Derek Thomas, you know, God rest his soul, one of my greatest friends. You know, he's the one that helped me get through Alabama, because I didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go to Georgia Tech because I wanted to go to ACC where they played basketball. You know, SEC is football. But when I got to Alabama, you know, Spree came in after he transferring there. We had a good time. You know, Spree was one of those crazy athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he couldn't go right. I mean, left to save his life.
Mm-hmm.
But when he got to Don Nelson and Golden State, he forced that in him. And Spree was just, when you talk about D you up, we had a great defensive team. You had me, you had Jason Caffey, you had James Robinson. And don't ask me why didn't we win a national championship. I know we had a great team.
Y'all had Hollywood, but, man, too, huh?
We had Hollywood. We went to the
tournament every year.
Yeah. One point, we started five pros. Hollywood was at the point, Spree was at the two, I was at the three, Jason Caffey was at the four, and Ron Rogers was at the five.
Man.
And that was our starting lineup. You know, but, you know, you got to think about Spree and I were both seniors. You know, the other guys were juniors, and then Roy was a sophomore. So, but we learned a lot. We helped each other out. But I think the way Wimp coached us prepared us for the next level, because he made us realize it ain't just about playing the game, it's about thinking the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They came real close this year in the tournament.
Yeah.
I know you was going crazy, Brandon Miller. Y'all got a nice one coming out of there.
Yeah, he's really nice. And the crazy part is his dad was a tight end at Alabama when I was there.
Oh, okay.
His mom ran track at Alabama. That's why everybody was like, how did somebody this fucking good go to Alabama?
Yeah.
It's the connection.
Yeah.
And so he ended up, man, you know, I'm just happy he didn't, you know, go down for that crazy situation that happened.
Yeah.
But he's a hell of an athlete.
Yeah.
He probably going to be a top five pick.
Mm-hmm.
Probably
number two.
Top three.
Think number two?
I think going number two.
I think going number three.
It's crazy.
Charlotte got number two, right?
Yeah, but they don't need a guard. Yeah,
they
right.
They need a wing. They don't need a point guard.
They don't need a point guard.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it'll be interesting. Definitely top four.
Yeah.
Yeah. 92, your 11th overall pick to the Rockets. And as you said earlier, like, you looked for fit. And they had obviously all the pieces. What is it like coming from a program where you saw success but never really got over the hump to playing with the Dream and everyone else on that team?
Houston.
Yeah, it's so hard to get over that hump. And sometimes you can look at you know, situations. Like, I look at my situation in Alabama and realize, like, okay, every year we lost to a team that was better than us. And you had to face reality. You know, my senior year, we lost to North Carolina. They won it that year. And then when you get to Houston, you're looking around like, shit, who's better than us? Well, you got Seattle, who kicks our ass all the time. And you got that team called the Chicago Bulls that kicks our ass. And we just said, we just got to fight hard. And people don't understand. It's like one of my favorite shots that nobody talks about was a shot I hit as a rookie in Seattle to send us in overtime. You know, they came, you know, you think I got Vernon, I got Kenny, I got Dream. And I took the shot and we go into overtime. We eventually lost that game in game 7. That was my rookie year. Next year we came back. We still had a great year, but it was just something about fucking Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, man. Yeah. And people don't know how freaking good Sean Kemp was, man. I remember him in high school. Cause we same athlete. Class in high school.
Where's he from?
He's from Virginia, right?
Indiana.
Okay. I mean, when I say, I wish y'all could have seen this dude in high school. You know, because Alonzo Mourning was considered the number one player in the country that year. And Sean, he would be me, Sean, Allen Houston. We were all hanging out. And Sean one day says, I can't stand that motherfucker. We're like, what are you talking about? He ain't better than me. And this is the first time I ever seen someone like got so fucking motivated because of, like, he went out the next game.
Who did he say that to?
He was talking about Alonzo. Talking about Zoe. That mug, because even Chris Jackson was there. And Chris Jackson was sitting there, you know, and he was like, you know, funny. People don't know how funny Chris was before he got in the NBA. He was a loose guy, but this dude come down one time, Sean Kemp. I never seen somebody this big, Howlin' Rock, takes off from the free throw line, dunks on Zoe, and be like, that's why I'm the best motherfucking player in the country. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, okay, all right. And it was just... You know, stuff like that is just weird. But, you know, but Houston, though, was a perfect fit for me, man. It was, you think, but they needed a three. I was a three. I could, you know, play off a Dream. If you duck Dream and he didn't block the shot, I was blocking the shot on the other side. And then you had Vernon, one of the best perimeter defenders in the game. Dog. You know, and it was just a great fit. And we just needed the bench pieces. Then we got Mario Elie and Sam Cassell the following year. You know, so that put us over the top. And I know... We always talk about this, you know, about who would have won in 94-95 if MJ would have left. But, you know, people don't realize how good Dream was and how competitive Vernon Maxwell was.
Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, Kenny said y'all would have handled him. Yeah. And, you know, what was your thoughts? Obviously, you know, you have an understanding and you won a lot. Yeah. Those are some tough Bulls teams, but y'all was tough too. So.
Yeah, we were tough. But this is why I know we would have won it, because I played for Phil. And I go back to this 2006 season. I'm sorry, 2004 season when we were playing San Antonio, and I had to guard Tim. Tim gave me 36 a night. I'm begging for some, man, y'all give me a fucking double team. Because Tim started facing me up and doing stuff that I had never seen before. I said, I need a double team. And Phil was like, and one man won't beat us. I mean, damn, he won't one man beat us. He's killing me right now. Yeah. You know, and so he double teamed. I said, and with that same mentality, I knew it wouldn't have changed with Dream. And you think about this. And I'm looking back at everybody that they had on that Bulls team. I know I'm a better defender than all them dudes. Mm-hmm. And I know Dream is better than Tim. So they wouldn't have been able to stop Dream. They said, okay. And I feel like when the young Rob would have been competitive enough to stop Scotty. Mm-hmm. And so I figured that's why we would have won it. And then you got, you know, everybody said, what about the, you know, Black Jesus, meaning MJ? Look at the way Vernon played. I'm telling you.
Vernon didn't back down from nobody.
I'm telling you. Watch Vernon play. Vernon would give you 30 to 40. One of the craziest athletes you would ever see play this game. But because of his craziness being Mad Max, people don't talk about it or even view really what he was. Did or how good he was.
Facts.
We had a good team, man.
Yeah. Facts. You got any crazy? I'm a huge fan of Matt. We had a story.
That's the homie.
I'll tell you our story. So we were in Houston one time with the Warriors with Nelly. Mm-hmm. And somehow he found out we were going to have shoot around there. So we got there. He had like a full hour workout. Like, Nelly, look at me. You know, you need a 10-day. Like, everybody was both full sweat. I promise you.
No.
We had first walked in there. Like, somehow he found out where we were practicing at. So he had got in an hour before, had a full workout, talking about a 10-day. Nelly, what's up? 10-day. Like, this is what, 07? Yeah, that was the We Believe season, right?
That was the We Believe
right?
season.
Unbelievable. And I had to kind of look around like, is he serious? And people were like, no, he's serious. He's dead-ass
dead
serious.
Serious.
Like, he was...
And he looked good, though.
Looked great.
He looked great.
Looked great.
Hey.
He looked great.
You talk about freaking bodies. His body is just... He was just ripped for no reason. Didn't really work out,
yeah.
but just was ripped. And he could just stay up all night, drink, smoke all night. That mug gonna come out and come go for 40.
Yeah.
His favorite thing was if you come to L.A. and play, he loved playing in L.A. That mug would hit a jumper and find out where the Chili's, you know, this is when the Chili's would sit on the sideline. That mug would fall and push himself back into the Chili's, look at him, prettiest white teeth, smile at him. I'm fucking him up tonight, baby. And get back out there. It's like, he was, man. Vernon was just, man, he was funny, man.
He was, said, I'm fucking him up tonight.
I'm telling you, man, that dude was a crazy competitor, great crazy. Athlete. And he was just, man, you had to be there. Another time, I mean, we had this incident. We were playing, you know, how sometimes you have shoot around. Guys leave. We still shooting around. All of a sudden, our strength and conditioning coach comes running out like, yo, man, I need some fucking help. Vernon going fucking crazy. So we run in there, and Vernon and Carl Herrera both have weights in their hand. And them motherfuckers just boom, boom, hitting each other with the weights. And they like, help. He's like, I be damn, I'm not about to hit with a fucking weight. And so them motherfuckers fought till they got tired. And then the next day, they hugged it out. You know, and if you ever see Carl,
Carl's a big dude.
Yeah, Carl's shoulder came out of place. Vernon was the first person, like, I got this, my boy. He would help him to the back, and then 3 weeks later, the motherfuckers fighting again. And it was just the craziest relationship. But those two loved each other, and that was just the competitive nature of Vernon, boy. It's a lot of stories. Even though the time when I had to go save him in the stands.
I remember that.
First
he
time.
He walked straight up.
It was.
What happened? So for those who didn't see it.
So we playing Portland. Portland's kicking our ass, right? You know, I'm pissed because you know when you have a good game and you lose and you feel even worse? So I'm sitting at the end of the bench and all I hear is, yo, Vernon, who's that bitch on your arm? Vernon says, what? And I'm at the end of the bench because I had just got subbed out. So Vernon's jets by me. And I look this way. I'm like, oh, shit, he going in the stands. So I'm going up in the stands. It was two dudes. One dude jumps up. Vernon pushes him down. And he gets ready to swing on a dude. The other dude jumps up. And I'm like, I'm getting ready to grab him. He looks at me and sits back down like, yeah, motherfucker. I'm like this. I'm like, yeah, I'm swole, right? And I look behind me. It's Otis Thorpe, and I strength and condition
him. Yeah,
so he like sat
you
down
good.
Real quick. Like, and then the guy, he never hit the guy. He just pushed the guy down and said, what the fuck you say? Say it again. And the guy was like, oh. You know how everybody is. They talk mm-hmm. trash until they, you know.
Until Jack had to take it to the next level?
Yeah.
Where were you when I went in this thing? I needed you then. Come grab me.
Yeah.
Hey, any
$3 million later.
Did Dream Smack, was that true or was that rumor?
That's the truth, but I got there the season after
okay,
that.
Okay, so you weren't there for that. Okay,
but Vernon will tell you the story how, you know, Dream, you know, people don't, you remember.
Dream Smack too.
Vernon.
Oh.
So, you remember Randy? What's Randy? I can't think of Randy's name. He used to play for the Clippers.
Randy
Livingston? No. Another Randy. I can't think of his name. But we were playing the Clippers, and I think it was Randy, but, you know, everybody was scared of Ken. Was it Ken Norman?
Norman.
Everybody was scared of Ken Norman, right? You know, he was like that enforcer nobody would fuck with. So, we walking off the court, and Randy's talking shit to Dream. And then he pushes Dream. Dream hit him with a two-piece, boop, real quick. And then he goes, runs to get Ken. Ken's like, who hit you? Dream. Ah, oh, fuck that. Because they know nobody would fuck with Dream. Because people realize Dream had those hands. If you go back before Dream really deep dive into his religion, that mug fought every time he could. Mm-hmm. It was a $25 to $50 fine. Mm. He didn't give a shit. He would knock you out in a second. So I think the old Dream kind of came out. Because when you push someone, you kind of lose it sometimes. Yeah. He ran it with that two-piece real quick. Boop, he's like, I'm going to get my big brother. And big brother saw who it was.
No problems. And it's crazy you say that because he the best person in the world. Like, he the best dude in the world, Dream.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
best
he
best person in the world.
I want to backpedal a little bit. Your draft, 92 draft, was heavy. Shaq, Zoe, Christian Laettner. Any stories about that draft process or workouts or anything like that?
Well, you know, you go to Chicago, you have all these workouts, so, you know, so you have to do that treadmill test.
Mm-hmm.
So
the stress test.
It's me, Oliver Miller, Todd Day. We all hanging out, and we all talking about SEC, and Shaq's on the treadmill. He had just got to that point where he went to like the third level. And Oliver Miller was like, watch this. He goes over and unplugs the thing, and Shaq almost falls, and everybody starts laughing. What the fuck you laughing at? That shit ain't funny. It's all good. You know, Shaq was like about to whoop Oliver Miller ass, and then the people come, well, you got to do it again. Shaq like, do it again? Fuck that motherfucker, man. I'm out of here. And he left, and so after that, nobody's like, well, Shaq leaving? We all fucking leaving.
Everybody
so
out.
We just, you know, we follow Shaq because we know he's going to be the number one pick. So whatever he said goes, and
for all of us,
yeah, for all of us, yeah. But the craziest thing that happened to me personally was I had an interview with what's the coach of Seattle name, that coach Sean and all them? George Carl. And George Carl comes to me, says, you know, you should be playing in Chicago. I'm like, I just played in Orlando when I shouldn't have won. I won the MVP in Orlando. You think I'm playing in Chicago too? She said, what makes you think you shouldn't play in Chicago? I said, look around. I'm better than all these motherfuckers in here. I tell you that. And he was like, okay, that's all I need to know. I like confidence. And so ever since then, he and I had a good relationship. And it was so weird because of my draft. You know, 11 pick, everybody thought it was going to be Harold Miner or Tracy Murray. And so for me, this was the first year that the draft wasn't held in New York. It was in Portland because that's the year of the Dream Team. And so my mom at the time was scared to fly. My dad had just had neck surgery. I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. My agent was in New York. So I think I was the only person that went to the draft by themselves that was going to be a lottery pick. Mm. So I was literally in the bathroom when the Houston pick came up, and I walked back. And, you know, everybody, you know, they have the things in their ears where they take the camera. They got one camera in front of Tracy Murray, one camera in front of Harold Miner. And then all of a sudden, you hear them all do this, and they start running over towards where me and Doug Creasy, because me and Doug Creasy were boys, because we did camps together. We were always hanging together. We always got cut at the same time. So we were all on that van at these events leaving at the same time. And I was like, oh, Doug, you about to get drafted by Houston. And then when Houston called my name, I think that was the best moment in my basketball career outside of winning rings, because not many guys go to the team they really, really want to go to.
Right.
And from that moment on, it was just the best feeling for me, man. Mm. So that was a great moment in my basketball life, and I started winning championships.
The evolution of a stretch four, like, you have to have it now, but it wasn't really a position back then. You know, you obviously came in as a three man, but kind of transitioned to that stretch four. Speak to the kind of the development of that and where that came from.
Well, it came from because nobody could guard Charles Barkley on that team. We were playing them in the playoffs. We were down 3-1 to them. And
Charles was in Phoenix.
And we were down. Cause we had just made that big trade to get Clyde. We traded away Otis Thorpe, you know, as our power forward. So the first two games, he was killing Pete Chilcutt, who was our power forward. Then he was killing Chucky Brown. And all of a sudden, they looked at me like, well, you know, you got to make a lineup change. Let's go.
Did Chucky have the gold tooth back then, or are they regular?
He had the gold tooth. You know Chucky. Chucky Dirty South, man. He still got that gold tooth probably. So they put me at power forward. And, you know, even though Chuck was way stronger than me, but I was faster, I was quicker, I was longer. So, and I'm not saying I didn't stop him, but, you know, I kind of did, you know, from getting 50 a night, he got 30 a night. Mm-hmm. And so he eventually came back and won that series. And from that moment on, it was like, oh, you are a power forward. Mm-hmm. And that's why they, and in the next series, you know, we went on to play San Antonio, which kind of worked in my favor because people forget Dennis Rodman was on that San Antonio team. Mm-hmm. And what Dennis going to do? He going to rebound. He ain't coming out the paint.
Yeah.
And so I was just knocking down threes. And then we went on to play Orlando, and, you know, Horace Grant ain't a true power forward like it was back then, like the Karl Malones and all that kind. And then I would just light him up. And so after that, they was like, you are a power forward. And then I got to L.A. I had to put on a little weight, and it kind of just changed my game from there, man. Because when I first got in the league, you know, I'm slashing, you know, I'm dunking. Right. I'm shooting threes, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. You know, because that's how we first met in Phoenix when you used to come work out with us.
Yeah.
He was No. He was like fresh out of high school.
I was a kid.
Yeah, he was young. He used to work out with us. Like Sam and, Sam was just like him and Sam. Every time I look up, him and Sam were together.
Well, I mean, obviously, you're known for the offensive side, but your defensive game was heavy. What were some of the tricks of the trade? Because you were one of some that learned how to guard that position. Yeah. One of the greatest post defenders that doesn't really get the credit.
Two-way player.
Lock up on the wing. But what were some of your tricks when you would have to play the bigger, stronger guys?
My whole thing was these big, strong guys like to feel your body. And I used to always... And so, friend Kurt Rambis literally wanted me to come coach with him in Minnesota so I can teach them this move I used to do where I know my arms along, so I would use my arm to give me this space. So when you spin, I move my arm. You're not spinning off me. You're spinning off my arm so I can get in front of you. You know, it worked with a lot of people other than Chris Webber because he was just too damn long. But most everybody, and Chris Webber and Rashida didn't work against. And so this is what I was doing. I just was just, you know, try to think. I would lean to the side to make you go to the other side because I wanted you to go that way. But the other thing that was a great connection was me and Kobe had this connection where you in the post, Kobe would literally turn around and look at you because I'd be like, Kobe! And he'd turn around because he knew what was coming. I had this move where I would stick my arm between you and your arm. I would poke the ball loose. And I've been doing that since college. So everybody said, you learned that from Dream. I said, no, I taught Dream that. And so because all my life I've been smaller than the post players I had to play. Because in college I played center because we had nobody else to do it, even though I was a small forward. And so I had to learn to use the tricks of the trade, my quickness and my size, you know, and it was just one of those things that I just learned to play. I just love playing defense. And for me, that's my biggest regret. I never made an all defensive team. And people are like, well, you didn't play. I was like, dude, I was 100 steals a game. Ooh. I was 100 blocks a game my first couple of years in Houston. You know, I was the first guy to ever be a 100 guy. And that's 100 blocks, 100 steals, 100 threes in a season. And there's so many things like that I was like pissed about because I value defense.
Right.
I think defense wins championships. I even get mad now watching the games when you get these guys that like, there's this point. You know, like, no, dude, you got to move your feet. You got to be in position. You got to go ball you, man. It's just, it's just so weird. But I just love playing defense, man.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano. And we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name.
That's my game.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
How do you feel about so many people can't shoot in the game down? They just, like, they backing off guys and just, how do you feel about that?
You know, that happened to me. When I was in Houston, I was reluctant to shoot the ball. Now, I couldn't shoot the ball, but you just want to get it to the superstars. And for me, I think guys got to learn how, okay, you want to back off me? Just take a dribble in. And take a dribble in and shoot the shot. And, you know, eventually you make one and you make two, people are going to guard you. Then you go from there. But I think now the game is predicated on the three so much that people, you know, even when you look at guys like DeMar DeRozan, who I love to death, and they're like, oh, he's averaging 30 points a game, but he can't shoot three. Who gives a shit?
He got 30 points.
Yeah. It's about getting the buckets, points. Man. Yep. At the end of the day, it's about getting buckets. You, I don't give a shit if you knock down 10 threes and I knock down 32s. It's still the same thing. You know, it's just the efficiency of getting buckets and making the right play, because there's not a team alive going to let you post up and you killing someone in the post. Because first of all, if I'm guarding you, Kim, I'm going to ask for help. Now you got a double team. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to make an easier shot for these guys out here on the perimeter. Right. That's the one thing I like about the way Miami is playing. You know, if you watch every 3-day take, it's up on the line. Mm-hmm. It's not like everybody else who's like trying to shoot logo threes. Exactly. Man. Like, it's efficiency. Okay, in the playoffs, you have to take great shots. And when you up on the three-point line, that's a great shot compared to 2 feet behind, which is a good shot for somebody, unless you're Steph Curry. Right. Man. And so people, that's what I look at now with the three and the twos. I'm like, dude, just get buckets. Just get buckets. Think about it. If Joel Embiid would have just got more fucking buckets by taking his big ass in the paint, they would have kind of won that series. But no, he want to face up and shoot that little ugly fadeaway jumper.
Crossover,
you know, I'm like, dude, no. You, who? Al Horford is killing you playing good defense because you playing in his world.
Allowing him to.
Mm-hmm. Take him to your world.
Yeah.
And go drown him.
Yeah.
Go drown him in that post. That would be the one. Yeah. Now, I mean, obviously MVP and super skill, but like you said, sometimes you just got to use what God gave you. Yeah. That's your size. Yeah.
You got to take him in your world. That's why when I say about take him in your world, when bigs try to cross up littles, they'll face up a little. Why the are you facing little up? Back his little ass down. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm too old school sometimes. When I try to make the game simple, they may make it hard.
Your second and third year, you know, I'm from that area. y'all won championships back to back. They called it Tustin.
Uh-huh.
How was it around that time?
Man, Tustin, you know, Clutch City, whatever you want to call it. It was a fantastic time. Because if you think about it, Houston, one of the third largest cities in the United States. They've had the Oilers with Warren Moon right there, almost winning a championship. You know, the Astros with, you know, Nolan almost winning championships. None of these teams ever won a championship until we got there. Houston went there with the Twin Towers, and they didn't make it across, you know, they didn't make it past the Celtics. And all of a sudden now this team comes in. And the first year, like, okay, they're good. And the next year, we start off at that 16-0 record. Mm-hmm. We're one of the best teams. And all of a sudden, you know, we go down 2-0. To Phoenix, and everybody starts abandoning us. Nobody even comes to our, you know, we just had a Mother's Day game. We had a Mother's Day game in Houston, in the Summit, you know, and I think we had about maybe 5,000 to 6,000 people in there. And, you know, and you think this arena holds 12,000. It was half empty. And I remember going on TV saying, I said, well, you know, everybody want to call us, wasn't Clutch City, but like, well, you folded and shit. Now, You know, it's, y'all didn't come to the games. We need your support. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of got mad. But then they realized, oh, shit, they do need our support. We went on to win that championship that year. But Houston, great city, no state tax, no state tax. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's good as an athlete, man. Yep. You get to keep the money. And it's just, it's just one of those cities where you fall in love with because the people there are nice. You know, the economy is great. And, you know, now that you retire, one of the things you like to do is eat. A lot of great restaurants.
Mm. how much harder is it to win the second one?
It's so much harder because everybody's expecting you to win. You might not have a good team. You might have the same team guys be injured, but they expect you to. So you do it, you got to do it again. Mm. And for us, we started the season off bad. You know, Sam got hurt. I got hurt. Mario got hurt. Dream got hurt. And then the only person who was on a consistent basis was Otis Thorpe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we lose, and all of a sudden you say, no, we're going to get rid of Otis and bring in Clyde. And then we didn't gel until the last month because we never played together because we was all hurt. And then when we got Clyde, we gelled, and we realized what we can do, and we went small, and we just started running and gunning. You know, even though we had the anchor and dream, but he'll get a block shot. We taking off running. He'll sit back and wait. We score. Mm-hmm. We come back down. If we don't score, or with the others, we had to take it out. We said, dream. Go get your big ass on the block. Mm-hmm. We give it to you and get out of the way. And so, and that's how we played, man. But it was hard to repeat. And then it was really hard to three-peat, you mm-hmm. know. The next year, we got our asses handed because everybody was hating on us. MJ came back and he had a squad. So for only 4 years in Houston, man, I was two championships mm-hmm. in 4 years. That's mm-hmm. not bad.
That's tough. During that run, you guys ran into a young Shaq and Penny.
Yeah.
Talk to us about them and you know, obviously how good they were, but just young at that time.
Oh, man, they were young. We used to call them America's team. You know, sort of like the Cowboys, they were always on TV because think about it, they just came off doing blue chips, mm-hmm. you know, they're winning and kicking butt. Shaq is, you know, doing all these things. And Penny, I hate that Penny knees went out because, man, you talk about freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. Man, you watch his highlights when you're young, he's just amazing, man. And then you got D. Scott and you got Anderson, all these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a great team. They're young. And the thing, the piece they was missing was Horace Grant. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy bringing that veteran leadership that could anchor that defense for a postman. But it was great to go up against him because we were pissed because – first of all, we weren't on TV that much as defending champions. You know, everybody was forgetting about us, and everybody just forgot about the run we had just made. We went in Utah, beat Karl Malone and all those guys. We went into Phoenix, beat Charles, and we were down 3-1, came back to win that. And then we beat the best team in basketball, the San Antonio Spurs. People forget that was David Robinson, you know, Dennis Rodman, you know, Sean Elliott. They had a good crew. Mm-hmm. You know, we beat that team, and then we were going on to sweep Shaq, you know. But it's just like I said, once you get on a roll as a team, can't nobody stop you. It's like it don't matter what defense you're throwing, we've seen it all. And at this point, it's about us just knocking down threes. You think about it. When Anderson missed those four free throws, mm-hmm. it's almost like it's destiny. It creeps into your mind and the other team's mind like, fuck, we had them beat and we lost this game. And now we started shaking our chest like, oh, we cocky as hell now. You can't beat us. We know the basketball guys on our side. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people always forget that those next 2 years is what made it so easy for us, they moved the three-point line in. That was the year they moved it in. So we were knocking down threes at a high clip. You know, so that was easy. So yeah, but the two-peat was hard. But like I said, that three-peat was damn near impossible, and we didn't. So I mean, it's hard, man, to win in this league. Period. So
we're gonna get to the point where you did three-peat. So don't worry. traded to Phoenix in the Charles Barkley deal. Not there long. You arrive in LA with Shaq, Eddie, Nick, Sid, Eldon Campbell. Lose to Utah in that first round. What was going to LA like and getting a chance to play with Shaq initially?
Well, it was great, you know, because you think about all the battles Shaq and I had in college and then in finals and then to play alongside him and see his development. If you watch young Shaq, he didn't have the footwork as he did as he got older. He started spinning and dunking on people and doing that thing, and he started, you know, hitting his jump hook. And then, you know, you're playing with Kobe, the guy, and you know, we all said it, we all seen it, how hard he worked. And then you had guys that, you know, like Eddie and Nick and Rick Fox, and you know, Eddie Jones, probably one of the most athletic guys mm-hmm. ever. You know, Nick is one of the most competitive guys ever. But when you got that and you got little young Kobe sitting on there like, I need all those shots you getting, I need. And so we went into Utah and got swept. And everybody talks about, why did you go to Kobe for him to take that final second? Because the dude was hot. People forget about that. Is you go with the hot guy. And every, to me, great coaches go with the hot guy. He had, like, I think, like 17 in the fourth or 16 in the fourth, something good. And he just missed the shot. So everybody's like, you can't give it to a young guy. But right from that moment, that you can tell that this dude was going to be something special, because it not even he can't even buy beer yet. Can't even buy liquor. And he's taking over a team and, you know, saying, get on my shoulders. And it was hard. But I think the best thing for us is when we brought in pieces that fit. I know we hate to see Eddie and Nick go, but they weren't the pieces to make us a championship team. And then also we added Phil, who made Shaq finally get in shape, you know, basketball shape. And he made Kobe play more together. And then we just, you know, we was able to win a championship.
Speak to Phil's greatness. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to, I only got a year with him, but his ability to push people's buttons for the greater cause of the team. He may get in a motherfucking argument. I mean, Ron used to cuss his ass out, but he knew how to push those buttons to get different guys going. Speak to his greatness and kind of what he brought to that team.
I think what the main thing is, he got guys to understand this is bigger than you. And, you know, he also got that little, you know, you have the devil and the angel. He's got the angel of coaching Michael Jordan on his shoulder, and everybody looks at the angel instead of the devil and kind of, you know, listens to him. But the thing with Phil, what people don't talk about, is his ability to just bring you to a side and talk to you about what he needs you to do for the team. You know, I had so many guys that come out of meeting with Phil and said, man, Phil told me I need to do this, this, and this. Have you talked to Phil yet? I'm like, nah, he ain't never called me in the office. Like, you what? He says, never. They said, Phil and I never had a conversation except for one time. And the only reason we had a conversation is because I was on the training table getting my back worked on. He was about to get his back worked on. We had a conversation, and the conversation went exactly like this. How you doing? Good. He says, so what happened between you and Danny Ainge? I didn't like the motherfucker. Okay. End of conversation. And we never had a conversation other than like, yo, help me, give me a double team with Tim. We don't need that. You know, it was never like, you know, like Pop and I've had conversations. He's asked me about my daughter. He's asked me about my family. You know, Rudy and I have conversations. So it's just one of those things that I think Phil was one of the type of person, if he needed you to do what's best for the team, he would have a conversation. And I think deep down he knew I put the team first. I didn't put myself first. I didn't care if I scored. I didn't care. But as long as we won, that's all I care about. And so for me, I think that's how Phil was able to bring everybody together. He knew he'd go to B-Shaw and said, B-Shaw, I need you to talk to Kobe. I need you to talk to Shaq. I need them to play better. I need them to play defense. And it was one of those things that he was like a psychologist where he just know how to mentally get people motivated.
As you see Shaq's greatness and Kobe starting to grow, what was that process like?
It was a great thing to watch. I think everybody really saw the process when we played Indiana in the finals, and they saw him when Shaq fouled out, Kobe was able to take over. But we saw it all season. We saw it in practice. We saw how he was getting better and better. We saw how hard he worked. And I think what was best was like Shaq understood it too. You know,
whether Shaq, he admitted it or not, he understood it.
And he'd know, because there was moments where Shaq would give him the ball. And you know, this is how you know, because Shaq would back off and try to get out of his way. And he would go to the dunker spot and let Kobe do his thing. That's how he was able to get that dunk in the Portland series. Because he was letting Kobe do his thing. And even though he was killing, but, you know, okay, who has a better advantage, Kobe or Shaq, you know? So he said, go ahead, Kobe, you're hot. And he was able to get a shot. And I think, you know, it's just like anybody, when you feel like it's your team, you got this young buck trying to take over, and you still got it. You know, it's the difference when you don't have it. You still got it. And you're like, no, I still got it. This is still my city. But I think he realized, you know, I need this dude to get what I want. I need everybody on this team to get what I want. It's not about me. Because we all seen MJ try to do it until he got, you know, Pippen and all, you know, Horace and all these other guys to make them whole.
Tony,
you got to have this. And I think that's what he did.
Any funny, crazy stories either between them or just of a young Kobe? Or we always try to ask our guests that.
Oh, you know, everybody knows about, you know, the bet and him smacking some Mikey Walker on the bus. And everybody knows about how mad he would get. We would play, you know, the string game.
Hold on, he smacks Mikey Walker? I ain't heard that
You never
one.
Heard this story?
Uh-uh.
So, basically, we would make little bets. And so one day, Samaki made a bet with Kobe, and we all pay up immediately. And Samaki didn't pay. You know, Samaki was new to the team. Mm-hmm. And so Samaki didn't pay him, and Kobe kept asking. One day, 2 days, 2 weeks later, he's like, you gonna give me my money, I'm gonna smack you upside the head. So as Kobe was walking past him on the bus, he's like, Samaki, you got my money? Nah, motherfucker, got your motherfucking money. Stop asking me.
Oh.
He smacked
Kobe
the shit,
smacked the shit out of him.
He smacked the shit out of Samaki. Smack like, it was like a shock. Smack, whoa, 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 motherfucker, wait, whoa. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And he just walked. And he walked out there. It was the funny thing. I don't know if he ever paid him or not, but I said, no, I'm not paying you after you smacked me. But it was just one of those things, man. But yeah, it was funny. And, you know, it, Cole, we would always mess with Cole. We'd be in practice. You know, the second team would beat them. Kobe wanted to play another game. And, you know, Phil knew that he's like, nah, we ain't playing enough. He'll get so pissed. This dude literally wouldn't talk to us the next day until he got his revenge. Mm-hmm. You know, he just had that killer instinct. And even when we would play string games in practice, you know, Kobe couldn't shoot threes, you know, in the first couple of years of his career. He would get mad because he wouldn't win a game, and he'd be at the early the next day working on number threes. All right, guys, we're going to play a string game today? And like, nah, we ain't playing today, dog. Just to fuck with him, right, man? He was just that. He wanted to win at everything, man. So that was just one of us just to give him hell and play with him. But but the dude, it was so many funny stories. Our best times, man, literally after practice, when we would sit in the locker rooms and chop ice down and just shoot the shit, man. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I don't know about you guys. That's what I miss most about not playing.
Yeah, we was talking about that.
The locker room talk.
The bus rides, the planes, the locker room. Mm-hmm.
The going to dinners on the road.
You mentioned early, and we're going to get to Timmy down the line, but you were there for Hakeem's greatness and dominance as a big. Talk to us about Shaq's.
Yeah, most of these are just, when you just talk about sheer force and dominance, he's is nobody like him. You know, his ability to take it on the break, spin and dunk on you. And the one thing that I will admit that I look up to Shaq in the sense that I couldn't have been him. Because if you on the block and you see how much he gets beat up and doesn't react the way he could kill somebody. Mm-hmm. You know,
he tried to kill Brad Miller.
I know. I'm like, it's so many times where you could just literally spin right and just mess somebody up, man. He wouldn't do that.
Real off.
He wouldn't do it. He's like, he would take it and he, there's a couple guys like Ostertag, Brad Miller, and all those guys that he didn't take it from, but he was just, man, and the refs, I would go to the refs like, did you just hear that smack? Oh, he's big enough. He can handle that. That doesn't
just
fucking matter, man. It's a fucking.
Point.
If I smack you in your face right now, you tossing me. Mm-hmm. So just call the call. And so, but he was graceful enough where he took it. And he's like, it's almost like he knew that that came with being that big and that dominant that he just had to overcome it. And he'll tell you to the day, if you'd have ever just got in shape like he did that first year Phil came, they wouldn't have broke up him and Kobe. Mm. They'd have found a way to make it work. And he would have been, the Lakers would have been,
ain't no telling.
Sheesh. Mm-hmm. It'd have been so dominant, man. It'd been amazing. So, you know, even though they tried to bring in Carl and Gary, it was that disconnect. And you got to be connected if you want to win a championship. Mm.
98-99, you guys fall short, swept by Utah, swept by San Antonio the following year. Speak to the growth and the importance of feeling that. Before you guys go on your run for three.
Are you talking about 1-2-3 Cancun? See, people don't understand where that came from.
Talk to me, because we're actually shooting a show like that with Amazon that we're going to launch next year.
See, the 1-2-3 Cancun came when we got swept by Utah. And people don't understand, it wasn't to be negative, it was to try to loosen up. Nick was trying to loosen up the team because we was down 3-0. He said, man, let's just go ahead and play loose. If we don't, we go into Cancun on three. 1-2-3 Cancun. And everybody took it as Nick saying, oh, fuck this, the season's over, right? He was trying to loosen guys up. Mm-hmm. We lost that game. You know, we lost to a better team. We were a young, immature team that got beat by a veteran team who went on to go to the championship. But didn't win it, though, but they went on to the championship. And for us, everybody was like, And then the next year, you know, we hate that the Forum got shut down by San Antonio. We got beat by a better team. And sometimes people don't look at the other team. They just look at you as an individual. Like, oh, you got you bad. You're not good. You suck. No, no. We got beat by a better team. We got beat by Tim Duncan, you know, Mario Elliott, Sean Elliott, David Robinson, who people forget is one of the best fucking players and best centers ever played this game. And so we got beat. But the next year, you know, we came in, everybody was motivated. Everybody was motivated. We're locked in. You know, Shaq got in shape because we got this new coach Phil coming in. And I think this is the first training camp I've ever been to where everybody was in shape when you come into training camp. And because nobody knew what Phil was, how he was going to be, was he going to run as a diff? And, you know, because it's not like now where you can look at all the film on our phones and shit and see the history of what he did in the Bulls and how they used to run. We didn't know any of that. So we got Phil and everybody was in shape. And we started the season out really good. And we just rolled from there, man. Mm.
One of your most famous shots might not be your favorite, but the game 4 shot versus Sacramento, the anniversary of that of 21 years is coming up soon, isn't it? 21 years. Yeah. Walk us through that shot and in that play.
The play is called What the Fuck.
Fitting.
As Phil said, we're going to run What the Fuck. Is you get the ball inbound, and I'm supposed to set a pick for Kobe to come off. You know, Doug Chris is one of the best defenders to play this game. He had Doug Chris on it. And Kobe, if he can get that angle going right, you know, and I think this is this layup he missed kind of taught Kobe how, if I'm going left, I don't have to get it to the hole. That's when he started developing that turnaround fader, right, to going right. That's just one of his favorite shots. And from that moment, he went to the hole, and he missed. And then Shaq short arm tipped it, and then Vlade tipped it out. And then I was sitting right there. And people always wonder, why were you still at the three? Why weren't you crashing the board? Because I played with Kobe. And Kobe, if he can't get the shot, he's going to kick that bitch back out to me for the game winner. And so I'm sitting there waiting like this the whole time. And then it got tipped. It got tipped perfectly.
Right to your pocket.
Right to where you know. Everybody likes to catch it right here so you can just go straight up. Yep. And then, you know, and that's one thing about being a shooter and guarding a guy like, a true four back then. They gravitate towards the paint.
Mm-hmm.
And when Chris Webber left me, I was able to knock down that shot. But it's one of the greatest moments that I've had in my career, man. It was just the fact when I watched the film and the overhead shot, when I make that shot, the whole arena jumps up at the same time. You see Dante when our ball boy streaking across the floor. And I still get goosebumps when I see that shot because you think about as a kid, when you grew up a Lakers fan, and as you a Laker, you hear them chant Kobe's name, you hear them chant Shaq's name. You really never get that moment. Now you step on the stage and the biggest moment, you knock down a shot and everybody's chanting your name, man. It's the best feeling ever, man. Especially, you know, knowing that after that, you're not paying for any dinners nowhere. you get in the club
and
easily.
You in LA. Man.
You go to Vegas, you ain't never paying for no drinks. That was the best moment ever, man.
And considering the you missed that shot, you guys are down 3-1.
Yes.
I mean, that's what a lot of people don't remember is you're down 3-1 if you missed that shot. Yeah. Another notable time,
the Sacramento, that was a good fucking team.
They were good, that's what I was going to say.
That was a good team.
They were a really good team. Yeah. You guys shut the door on a lot of good teams, but I want to talk about that game 6 because we've talked to Webb about game 6. We've heard Donaghy speak on game 6. Talk to us about just like that team, that game in particular, because Sacramento was a good team. You guys were the better team. You know, you came out and got the win, but Sacramento was a really good team.
Sacramento was a really good team. You know, people... They break everything down when they say, oh, it's the scandal. You know, Donaghy was calling this. I'm like, you know, it was a couple fouls that got on Chris Webber. I'm like, I know how to play Chris, but I made him foul me. He elbowed me. He screamed. It's like so many calls. But people forget in game 5, they got a lot of favorable calls. And people don't talk about it. They talk about it was a possession where Bibby went out of bounds or something, I can't remember exactly, and it was supposed to be in our possession. They got it. He knocks down a shot. So it all evens
out.
And so, but don't blame us for you had home court advantage. We go in your building in game 7. You got Stojakovic. To me, this is me. If you're able to walk without a limp, you can play.
Facts.
Especially in a game 7 to see who's going to go to the finals.
Facts.
He doesn't play in that game. And so don't get mad at us. Get mad at him. Mm. You know, we went in your building, took you to overtime and kicked your ass, and now you're going to call out, going to call foul. I'm like, no. You call foul on Stojakovic. He should have played in that game.
I forgot
nobody
about
talks
that.
About that.
I and
like,
about
you,
that.
You, this is why you play so hard throughout the regular season
to get there,
to
right?
Be home court advantage, to have your fans behind, and then you had the cowbells and stuff.
How rowdy was that crowd? Because this is the first time in 16 years that they got in the playoffs this year, and I remember those old crowds too. But how crazy and loud were they?
The moment Phil Jackson called his town a cowbell town, it was the worst decision he's ever made. Everybody in the room came with a cowbell, and they were just ringing that shit. We didn't hear, you know, we could hear anything Phil was saying. We looking at for a plays call, because, you know, he would do that whistle thing.
Couldn't hear
he can whistle, you can't hear that shit. So it was just mostly on us, you know, and that was a perfect time. Kobe like, oh, I got it. I'm going to go one-on-one.
I can't hear you. I'm going one-on-one. Come send me a pick, Rob. I got this one-on-one.
But it was, but throughout the years, we talked about Phil, and that's what he would do. He would put us in situations to make us uncomfortable. So when we had that, we would be comfortable. And that's the sign of great coaches. Mm-hmm. They put you in uncomfortable positions. So when the greatest moment arrives, you are comfortable. So
and allowed you guys, like I said, to elaborate, he allowed you to figure it out. He wasn't someone who was quick timeouts. Like if teams go on runs, he wants you to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like you said, for situations where you might not be able to utilize what he has to say. I used to love that about Phil.
Sometimes you look, and it's so funny, you look for help, and you're like, what are you looking at me for? Figure it out.
Just sitting there.
That's the best thing, you know? And I was coaching my son's AAU team, and I would sit down, and parents would get mad at me before not calling time. I'm like,
I do the same shit.
Let them figure it out, man. It's going to make them better. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that, you know? You don't have to micromanage everything. You don't have to do that. Let those guys, they're grown men. They're smart players.
Yep.
And I think that's one thing we don't get enough credit for. We've been doing this since a young age, and we have the IQ, but a lot of times the coaches forget that. Mm-hmm. They forget we know what the hell we're doing. That's why we're here.
Yep.
And that's one thing that's why Rudy was kind of my favorite coach of all time, because after timeouts, he would come to us and say, what y'all want to run? What y'all see out there? What's going on? You know how now these coaches will spend so much time in the huddle? Rudy would come and sit and talk to us like, what y'all want to run? Every time it was 15, that was to play for dream and get out of the way. But he would talk to us. And that's what coaches have to do with their players, you know, not the player that comes in and say, hey, we need to do this, 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 and tries to take over. No, just ask everybody as a whole, you know, what's the feel?
Mm-hmm. What you see?
Mm-hmm.
2003, we played in the Western Conference semis, and we ended y'all run. Remember that?
Oh, I remember that.
You remember that? It was some great basketball being played. I think that's for me. That's when
I was asking for help. I remember that.
Yeah, that's when Tim really took it to another level, man. Yeah. I've never seen nobody play like that, you know, especially against Shaq. But give me your experience and your take on it. You know, when you said we got a chance to see Tim and Shaq really go at it.
Yeah, you know, for me,
y'all was on y'all way to four.
Yeah. You know,
not three, four.
So Tim figured me out. I used to do this little trick thing with Tim where when I would guard Tim, I would always want him to go to the middle so I could have my hand on his hip. So every time Tim would jump, I would jump and pull his hip down and try to block his shot. And he would yell at the ref like, he's pulling me down. They're like, where, where? And it was a little trick I would do. And so the next year, Tim started facing me. I'm like, fuck, I can't do my trick now. Mm-hmm. And he would just go at me and then spin move, and I can't grab him like one. And we're just hitting shots. I mean, the dude was on a mission. And when you run across a player, you know, like Jimmy Buckets now, he's on a fucking mission.
That's how Tim was, exactly.
Yeah, and you can't stop him. You can throw everybody at him. And then, you know, feel like, oh, we're going to throw Shaq at him. He too quick for Shaq.
Bro, he started doing hooks and little runners on Shaq.
I was like, the best bet is try to get him on the other side of the floor because, you know, Tim wasn't that good off that right block. But it's like, but he just was that year. And then when he wasn't hitting, you know, everybody knows about Kobe. If Kobe don't respect you, he's not going to really guard you. He wasn't really respecting Bruce Bowen. Next thing you know, six. I'm like, damn, Bruce had six threes? All in the corner. And I was like, damn. It's like, and then you get to a point, and then we go into San Antonio, and I missed that damn shot, which could have changed the whole outcome of everything. And once I missed that shot, it was like our whole team was like, damn, Rob missed. Basketball guys must mean we gonna lose.
Hey, for real, because if you saw Tim face,
it's a video on Tim face where Rob the shot go in and come out, and Tim's just standing like this.
Yeah, it's
like it would have been over that fast for us, dog.
Yeah, and it was so weird that I think that's the most disgusted I've ever been because I said to him, I said, I don't miss those fucking shots, man. Mm-hmm. I don't fucking miss
it. It bounced right to him. He's like, oh, come on, man. Come on, like, I'm not brr. This again.
I'm like, fuck me, man.
But that shit went in.
Yeah. And it was just one of those things, man, where you sit back and it creeps in your mind. It's like, I don't supposed to miss the shot. Well, maybe it's not our year. The basketball guy saying it's their year. And, you know, it happened. The next day, you know, they went on to win a championship, man. Mm-hmm. And then I'm out it the next year because I missed the shot. I'm out. So, yeah.
You go to San Antonio.
San Antonio.
How was that, leaving the Lakers? And
it was weird, man, because you think about all the battles we used to have with San Antonio. It was almost like a rivalry that wasn't talked about. Because you think about when Shaq made up the story about him hating David Robinson and all that kind of stuff. But it was a rivalry. Right. And since then, I remember I went there and I had some people come up to me and said, you came here to sabotage our team, didn't you? I'm like, what you talking? What? I'm like, no. This is, well, why'd you come to San Antonio Spurs? Because I fit here. Mm-hmm. And I had signed, and it was weird because I was so pissed that the Lakers let me. I had 1 year left on my deal. And they looked at me like, well, you're washed up. They literally thought I was washed up. Mm. They said, well, because I think I went for 3 for 36 from three. Awful. But I said, you forget. There's a lot of miles on this body. We've been to the finals three. I was fucking tired. Mm-hmm. And I had no energy. And I was trying my best, but I didn't have any energy. I went back and looked at the film of my shooting. You know, if you usually jump like 2 inches to take a jump shot, I was shooting like an inch. Mm-hmm. It was just my legs were gone. And so, and then when I got to San Antonio, it was like I had that more time in the summer to recharge my battery. And I had a bad year, my first year in San Antonio. And people was like, oh, you here to sabotage. So the next year, people don't notice, I signed a 1 year deal the following year, 2005, because I knew that I was going to be better because I was really energized now. I signed like $1 million deal. And people don't even know. It's like I could have went to, because Shaq wanted me to come to Miami and play. They wanted me to go to Dallas and play because you're the missing piece for us to win a championship. But I said, no, I felt so bad that I had an awful first year in San Antonio and I stayed and signed, you know, and then we won in 2005. Mm-hmm, we won it, you know, and then I signed a 3 year deal and then I was out after that. But it was one of those things for me. You have pride as a player and you don't want anybody to view you as, you know, a bum in my mind. I was like, I think San Antonio was viewing me as, oh, he's washed up, he's a bum, he can't do this, right? And I was like, no, I got years left in me. I said, I don't think people understand. You know, by the time I got to San Antonio, I had already won 5 championships. I was already playing more playoff games than anybody. And my body was just tired. Right. And then from there on, you know, I had a couple of good years there, won 2 more championships, and then rode off into the sunset.
That was it.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name.
That's my game.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com. Where America goes to hire.
What goes on in your mind when the ball rolls to you like that? The clutch, like, I know you, Matt, know, like, you always been at an even cool. You always cool, laid back. And I think that's why you've always been able to knock those shots down when the ball comes to you. But what's going on through your mind?
You know, for me, it's just absolutely nothing. And you think about it, we play this game because we love this game. You know, I know it's become a business, but when we started out, we played it because we loved it. Then it turned into a business. Now kids, you know, it's a business from day one with all the NILs and, you know, the followings and stuff like this. But for me, it was just the love of the game, man. Having that ability to say, oh, I kicked your ass, I knocked down this shot on you. And so for me, I don't think about anything, because I know once I started thinking, that's when I start messing up. Because you tell so many people, like, you can go out and do a crazy dunk or something, and then you go into practice, man, do that dunk again. You can't do it because you got to think about it. Mm-hmm. But you can do it when you don't think. And that's how basketball players are. My best games are when I'm not thinking. I'm just playing and reacting. Mm-hmm. So I never think, man.
Right. Your seventh ring. Mm-hmm. Y'all sweep LeBron in the finals.
Yeah.
What was LeBron like then?
LeBron wasn't the jump shooter or the knockdown three. He was more of a drive guy. He'd get by you, big body, jump over you. And that whole game plan was like, we going to double team. Every time he come off a pick and roll, we going to double team him. And then it's almost like the water boy. Because if you had Mike Brown over there on the other side, every play they ran were our plays in San Antonio. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You can't run floppy down. That's our play. You can't, floppy side, that's our play.
Wedge roll, you can't run the roll, none of that.
You can't run that. He ran almost every play that San Antonio ran. And we look like, damn, this is going to be the easiest scout. And that's all we did. That's why we was able to sweep them, man. Mm-hmm. And then that's when, you know, I think Ilgauskas was trying to be a fucking three-point shooter. He didn't want to go to the paint. You know, mm-hmm. you're an all-star. Now all of a sudden you're playing against Tim. You want to shoot threes mm-hmm. and you can't shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of the easiest championships to win, man. Mm. Because it was
They wasn't ready.
LeBron was still young. Double team LeBron. Who else is going to score on that team?
The coach is a student of pop.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want to take you back to the year before against Detroit. You mean everyone raves about the Kings Lakers shot, but the shot you hit is it game five?
Game five.
Talk to us about that shot.
I tell people all the time is, you know, when you're playing in the San Antonio system, we got 60,000 plays. I've never been on a team with more plays than Pop.
We only run three.
Yeah. Hey, but he's always going to do those. It's going to be a pick and roll. And for me, I remember going in at halftime of that game, and I was like 0-6. I was 0-4. And I'm just talking to myself because I've always talked to myself when I'm fucking up. And like, because I think, you know, you can say what you want to say, but you can't motivate me like me. I know what buttons to push in myself. And I remember Bruce looking at me, like, oh shit, this dude crazy. So I come out and I have a good half. And what pissed me off more is like, Pop didn't run not one fucking play for me. If you go back and look at every shot I took, it was either a forced shot or I created something. I'm not a creator. And that's not me. I'm a spot up shooter, you know, slasher dunker, but I'm having to fucking take my own shots because he never ran a play for me. And so I'm knocking on these shots. And then at the end of the game, he's like, okay. The play was ran for Manu. It wasn't even fucking play for me. I'm inbounding the ball, and Rasheed bit. And it was like, it's almost like me saying, okay, I'm going to throw this at Rasheed to kind of make him do this and go with the play. So I bounce pass, which I hate fucking bounce passes. I don't bounce pass unless I really have to. I throw the bounce pass to Manu, and he kind of bites. And as soon as Manu comes back, I said, I'm shooting this bitch because I'm hotter than fish grease. And so I shoot it. And then after, I didn't realize that Tayshaun Prince almost blocked that shit.
Right there.
He almost blocked it. So for me, it was just one of those games, man, where you get hot and you just want it all the time. You want the rock. But that fucking Detroit team was a fucking beast, tough, man.
Right.
And you talking about four all-stars on one team. They played together, man. They played great defense. That was a tough series. But I will tell you, after we won game five, I felt like it was like your basketball guy said, oh, it's meant to be, dude. You just had one of your best games ever in the playoff game. You know, you scored more points in the second half than you probably scored in any game. And it was just, for me, it was a great moment, especially to do it on the road. You know, it's nothing different. Setting crowds up. I only have three pictures in my house, and this is one of the pictures I have, me making this shot. And the funny thing is just to look at the reaction of the crowd, because everybody knows that shit going in. You know, you got one kid like this, he knows, and everybody else like this right here. So it's just funny the pictures you see and you point out stuff, and it's just a great point. And then, you know, and also I got in the corner is my dad who's watching. He's like, he has that smile and it's like,
going in too. So, yeah. That shit's good.
Yeah.
The Detroit Pistons, the best thing that happened to them was me and Ron getting suspended. They wouldn't have had a chance.
we beat that ass when that happened.
Also, quick question. What'd you think about the number one pick? The Spurs have a number one pick.
I think it's going to be good for the organization because they're used to dealing with a Frenchman. You know, I deal with Tony, and I think, you know, everybody's thinking, I had so many of my friends from San Antonio text like, we're back. I'm like, no, you're not. I said, don't put that pressure on that kid. Mm-hmm. That kid needs, you know, he's going to need four other guys to be able to play with, and he's going to get time to learn the system. I think it's just going to be one of those things where he's going to be like a Dirk Nowitzki. Think about it, when Dirk Nowitzki first got in the league, everybody was like, oh, he's a bust. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, he's one of the best players. It took him some time to learn the game. Mm-hmm. He had to learn the just strength of the NBA and the speed of the NBA. Yeah. You know, people said, well, he's been playing professional since he was 15. It's not like he's Luka, where he's a big body. He can take that beating.
Right.
I think it's going to take him a while to take it. Like Giannis. It took Giannis a while to take that beating. Yeah, because your body hasn't matured. And you had to get to that point where you become a man, because he's still a young man.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He hasn't lost a young part. He has to become a man to play in this league. And I think everybody's comparing him to the next great thing to LeBron. I'm like, dude, don't do that to him. Mm-mm. LeBron is a unicorn for real. He's an alien, so stop comparing him.
As far as organization, family-oriented, what he's being taught right, the right way, and how to be a professional, that's the best place to be.
Best place to be. That's the one thing I will say about them. I remember when my daughter was sick. And my last year in San Antonio, and she went in the hospital, and Pop was like, don't come back until she's out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. I said, what? I said, don't come back. I don't care if she's feeling good. Don't come back till she's out of the hospital. I mean, she got out of the hospital on a Monday. I was back at practice on a Wednesday. He's like, what are you doing here? I said, you said don't come back. I said,
She's not out of the woods yet. Go home. Don't come back. I'm like, are you trying to get rid of me on the sly? He's like, no. I said, you know, family is the most important thing. And that's the one thing that, you know, you have to give it up to the Pop and the San Antonio Spurs organization. They know basketball is a business and is how we, you know, I live our lives, but that's not the most important thing. Your family is the most important thing. And for me, I'm really grateful for that because, you know, 2 years later, I lost my daughter. But it's just one of those times that, you know, you can't get those times back. Mm-hmm. You got to spend that time with your loved ones while you can.
Mm-hmm. Pop is big. I got a story because I want to give Pop his props. I had we was in Chicago, and I was on the way to the game. And at the time, my wife had just miscarried. Mm-hmm. And I was on my way to the game, but I wanted to go play. And Pop sent me, I'm talking about when I was in the locker room getting dressed, he made me put my clothes on and sent me back to the hotel and made me stay at the hotel for 2 days just to get my mind right. He didn't care about none of that shit. And it was around getting ready to go into the playoff time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But that's one thing I loved about Pop. They can say what he wanted as a coach and how the things he say, but he always put family before basketball.
Yeah, that's a big ups to him because he was, you know, and after that, he would always ask me, how's your daughter? So that's important to me, man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we love playing basketball and it's a business and we can make a shit ton of money at it. But at the end of the day, when all that's gone, all we have is our family and our loved ones, you know, and it's just a beautiful thing when you can have a coach to make you do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They care that much.
Yeah.
Seven championships, other than great players and coaches, what's the most important thing you feel like a team needs to have to win it all?
You got to like each other. You know, you gotta like each other, man. And I think I've never played it like we would all go to dinners. I think when it was with the Lakers, we weren't really a cohesive group. And Phil took one time. Phil said, "All right, nobody making the plans. We all getting on the bus because he know when we make plans, we ain't on the road. You get to a hotel, we got limos. We all in a limo. We gone." He said, "Nobody make plans." He made us all go to a comedy club. We went in through the back door. It's probably like this, and we're like, what the fuck we at, right? Mm. And then this is the first time I ever seen Fluffy. What's his name? What's the guy name? He plays, he's the comedian, Fluffy? Yeah, Gabriel Iglesias. He was funny as shit. We all laughed. And then from that moment on, we started doing a lot more things as a team. And it's amazing how we would come, oh, yeah, we friends, we good, but we wasn't that close. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, we became closer. And there's little things like that. I know even when I was in Houston, eight of us would go to dinner. No, Dream wouldn't go to dinner, but everybody else on the team would go to dinner. And when I got to the Spurs, we would all go to dinner. And it was just one of those things that you do as a family. I mean, the funny thing about the Spurs was Tim went out and bought us all those little Game Boys or whatever it was, and he made us all play poker. We all played poker on the plane. Everybody had, you know, those names, and you know, you had to put the $100 in the pot, and everybody was like playing, like who wins, you get the money. So it was just little things like that you do as a team, and it was, and that's one of the things as the championship teams, you gotta like one another. Mm. You gotta want to play hard for, you know. You think we always say we're a band of brothers. If someone smacks your brother, you're gonna smack them back, right? And so you gotta get that love for one another. And if you don't have that love, if someone smacks you and you don't wanna smack them back, that's no love.
Yeah.
That's no love right there. And you got it, you gotta have it. You know, and I know one thing that we did all have in common is we didn't ever help anybody up from another team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a damn. It was, you know, I even told McDice when we were playing the final, I said, if I elbow you, don't be mad at me. After this, we can go out and have dinner, but on this court, you my fucking enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Best team you ever played on?
It had to be the Lakers team. You know, you think we only lost one fucking game in the playoffs. 16-1, man. That team was freaking good. You know, San Antonio team 2005 was pretty good too. But I just think the way Shaq and Kobe was playing, the way Rick was playing. People don't talk about Rick's defense. Rick could play some elephant defense. You know, they're looking at, oh, he's a pretty motherfucker. He can't play, but he had a nastiness about him that nobody can think. And so
it's Matt just Fox.
No, I get mistaken all the time in LA for this dude. I'm like,
seriously?
Really? Still?
Y'all like nothing alike.
Nothing alike.
Yeah.
Nothing
yeah.
alike.
But it's maybe just that
two light skinned motherfuckers with good hair that didn't take no shit.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the thing, man. You know, if you think about the way Shaq played in that series, he was pissed off. He didn't win the MVP again. Mm. And he was just, man, he was so fucking dominant, man. I think what he averaged, like, what, 35 or 36 during that run? Something crazy. So, and then Kobe was playing. Think about it.
If Shaq didn't play that good, Kobe was like averaging in 28 something. It was fucking ridiculous how we were rolling. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about being pissed off when I missed that shot, but the second most I've ever been pissed off was when we lost game one to Philly. We was, as a team, we were so fucking mad. We never mentioned it about we trying to sweep everybody. We never mentioned it.
Chuck.
But we knew if we did that, we would be considered the best team ever.
And Chuck was frying y'all. Yeah. Then nothing y'all could do that game. Chuck was frying y'all.
Yeah.
Chuck was on one.
You know, but you know, if you go back and look at that game, people don't, it was a key moment in that game, the reason we lost it. I'm running down the court, and you know how you run and you try to jump over somebody, you kind of push them out the side. Dick Bavetta calls a foul on me. Dikembe goes and shoots the two free throws, sends us into overtime, and we lose that game.
Who shot the free throws?
Dikembe.
He hit both of them
shits? Yeah, and so it's that moment right there where, you know, they don't get us wrong, AI was doing his thing, but still, though, we should have won that game because it was like it was almost like the NBA knew. It's like, oh, these dudes are too fucking good. We gotta get, find a way to get a win. But it was so disappointing as a team. It's almost like the next practice, Fielder had to say shit to us. Mm-hmm. He saw how pissed off we were. He probably said, "All right, everybody go home," because he knew he ain't got to coach no more. Because he knew we were so motivated to come out and kick ass up that. Especially think about that. Out of all the players that you've ever seen in the league, what two players you would never want to make bad? Kobe and Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
You think about that. Mm-hmm. You can make, so you make, and like now you make LeBron mad. He still doesn't play like a Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make Giannis mad. He still doesn't play like a Kobe. It's the difference when you got two dominant guys
who
take your heart, you know, and knock your ass out too. You know, it's the difference, man.
I tell you they doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another tough one. Best player. You said obviously Dream was the best center. Was he the best player too? Best player you ever played with?
You know, this is so hard because if you look at it as a big, it's Dream. You look at it from a guard standpoint, it's Kobe. And not knock anything off Clyde, because people sometimes forget about Clyde.
Was Clyde. Fun.
Clyde was so Clyde. We'd go to practice. Clyde would be like this,
glide.
Reading the paper. Don't even warm up. And all of a sudden, all right, we running lines. That motherfucker outrunning all of us.
Yeah.
He was such a great athlete. But, you know, Kobe was, I think for me, Kobe's drive to be the best, his work ethic, to be in the gym, working on what he could not do. I played with a lot of great players, and I've seen players who go to practice and they work on shit they're good at or they're great at. Not Kobe. Kobe said, oh, I already got that. I'm great at that. I'm going to work on this. Now I'm great at that. I'm putting this up. I'm working on this. And you can't get a lot of guys to do that because I don't know if they don't have the heart, they don't have the time, they don't have the drive. But for me, Kobe, as far as his drive and his work ethic, was just above and beyond everybody. And, you know, you can hear people talk about it, but when you see it, and it's always weird when you hear people talk about it who never saw it.
Right.
You know, you saw it. Mm-hmm. You go to practice, and you're like, he ain't gonna beat me today in practice. And he already has iced up because he already been sweating. And so it's just to me, Clyde was good, Dream was good, Manu was a hell of an athlete. But I think if I have to pick someone, it's gonna be Kobe.
Mm. Out of the seven rings, which one do you identify or do you have a favorite?
95 is my favorite, man.
First one.
95.
Screw
was jamming in Houston, too. Coming down in Houston, man. Going down in Houston.
Because, you know, people don't realize the run we had to make, the teams we had to beat. You know, Karl Malone, John Stockton, you know, Kevin Johnson, who people don't ever talk about, was a fucking beast. Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley, then Dennis Rodman, then, you know, David Robinson, who got MVP that year. And then we went on beat Penny and Shaq them. So that run was amazing. And to be a sixth seed and not have home court advantage is something special. Now, if we'd have swept everybody, that would have been number one. But because of the journey and being a sixth seed, not having home court advantage was special.
We were popping around that day. Y'all had won. That's the y'all won a state championship. It was going down. Big serve.
Papa Doge used to be jumping, boy.
Going down. I'm telling you, cornbread.
Thursday, no, Papa Doge Thursday, boy, the best down. Place to be.
All right, man. Well, quick hitters. First thing to come to mind, we're almost finished here. Let us know. Okay. And I'm glad we get to ask you this question because you saw all three. MJ, Kobe, LeBron. Where they at in your opinion?
I think MJ is one, Kobe is two, and LeBron is three. Because
someone agrees with me.
I tell people all that I don't think MJ had a flaw in his game. You say people say, well, he didn't shoot threes. He could shoot threes when he wanted to shoot threes. He didn't need to shoot threes because you couldn't stop him going to the hole or pulling up on the J. You know, and Kobe was the same way. You know, and I think LeBron is a fucking great player. You know, so when you say this, people will think, oh, you smacking LeBron in the face. No, I'm not. He's still 1C. You know, Kobe's 1B, and this Mike's just his first, you know. And I know the body of work that all these guys have put in. But I just think if you say, is there a flaw in LeBron's game? Yes. Was there a flaw in Kobe's game? He couldn't play post defense. Mm-hmm. And people don't know, you know, if I say this, people
Real. That's why Bonzi killed him.
Yeah, see, and people get mad at me saying it. No, it's like, let's be honest, let's watch. And that Kobe, the way he used to play him was like this. It's like, you can't play a player like this. You got to have contact. It's so many things like that.
No, it wasn't offensively.
Yeah, it's just so many things you talk about. And so that's why, to me, that's how you set it up. Because, you know, those other guys got that itty-bitty chink
little
in their
bit,
armor.
Little one.
Little bitty chink. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to, you know, micromanage everything like we do in this world now, that's why you put MJ first.
And he got more rings than all of them. Facts.
Yeah. Go ahead.
One album you can listen to with no skips.
Man, it's going to sound painful, man.
Painful.
Nice. Man, because that was good my call. Senior year in high school, and that's all I used
like
to listen
to.
So, Painful was that's my number dope. One. So it's funny. I listen to that now. You have kids, and you compare your rap to their rap, and I say, man, look, this is the best rap album ever, right? And I show them, like, Peyton Fool. Like, what? Who's Rakim? Well, you know who Rakim is? I'm like, so it's just funny, man. But it's just fun.
Top five power forwards of all time.
Okay, top five. I'm say Tim Duncan, Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Kevin Garnett. And then it's just Rasheed Wallace.
Rasheed, man.
I think, you know, people don't understand how good Rasheed was.
I'm telling you.
You know, and his ability to shoot threes, post up. You know, Rasheed had that funny back where he'd just do like this, and then he shot it like Bill Cartwright from up here. You can never block it. But it was a lot of hell of a power force, man. You know,
was the era. McDice, Webb.
Yeah, you call him next day, I put Webb on there. You know, you think Grandmama on there.
Larry Johnson.
Yeah, so many people you can put on that list, man. But, you know,
I forgot about Larry Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah, if his back would have never went out, man. Who's telling how, you know? And I can't, you know, people also say, well, what about guys like Kevin McHale? I didn't play against Kevin McHale, so I don't know about him. You know, so I can only go against guys I played against and I see, you know, it's just,
that was a hell of a list.
Yeah.
So, a hell of a list.
You know, Charles Barkley was just, you know, he don't get enough credit for how he was only, what, 6'4", 6'5"?
Monster.
Just beasting everybody with his size.
Slapping motherfuckers, too, off the court.
Throwing motherfuckers through windows. Glass plate doors. Yeah.
Who's the best basketball player in the world right now?
Sheesh. The way Jimmy Butler's playing Jimmy Butler, but no. It's to me, I have to give it to the Greek Freak, man. The only reason I say that, you know, if you can get this AD you playing right now, I would say AD, but it's not a consistent basis.
Thanks.
And, you know, if you look at the way the Greek Freak plays, you know, even though he has his flaws where he can't shoot free throws, I just like how hard he plays each and the every motor. Game.
Yeah.
And his motor and his drive and his ability to get to the hole, even though it's traveled 3/4 of the time, it's just, to me, I just like the way the guy plays, man.
Yeah,
too. You know, people want to say Luka, they want to say Steph, but I just think, to me, I look at if you do it on both ends of the floor. I don't give a shit if you go 12 for 21 game, but if you play hard, I'm cool with that.
Yeah. I always say, can you imagine AD with Giannis's motor?
It'd be unfair. It'd be fucking unfair.
Cheat code.
Yeah.
Best Robert Ori name drop in a song.
So they
were looking out to cut you. They were looking at her. They said it was like a Wikipedia page. They had to like scroll. They didn't realize how many songs you had been name dropped in.
Hey, I mean, so many damn songs. I remember we were at a light, and this dude just pulls up next to us, and we just happened to have the windows down. We was in Pensacola, Florida, and the dude was playing Kevin Gates. and Kevin Gates named my name, and the dude is a white guy in a Challenger bopping his head. And I'm sitting in the car. My ex-wife is driving. And so we sit in the car, and he's like, da da da, Robert Orr. And he's like, and he looks at me like, and we turn left, and he goes straight. He's like, I couldn't have been Robert Orr. But, but you know, my current wife hates this song. I love this song. Don't you open up that window.
Oh, yeah. Travis Scott.
Yeah, Travis Scott.
The three-peat.
Yeah, the three-peat.
I just got a three-peat.
Yeah. And my wife, every time she says, like, is there something you need to tell me? I'm like, no, I didn't get you. But his thing is, I met Travis Scott once. You know, he was a huge Rockets fan, still is to this day. And I met him. I almost wanted to say, man, why'd you put me in that song? And what you mean by three holes the other week, man? It's just fun, man, when you hear like guys. Like, I remember we were playing New Orleans, and I ran up to Lil Wayne, and I said, dude, I'm honored, man. Do you even know who I am? And he looked at me like, nah, dude, man, I love your game. And so for me, when I hear my names in these songs, and I think my kids are more proud of it than I am.
That's dope,
because
that's
they get
honor.
To play it and and they talk about it. And it's like my middle son is the one, he's always, you know, he's into music deeply. He sings and all this kind of stuff. So he sends me every time a song comes out. It'd be an artist I've never even heard of.
Right.
Dad, I hear your name again. He sends it to me. So
that's dope.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
We had Wayne here last night.
No, you did?
Like 12 hours ago. Literally just
y'all up right now?
We didn't get out of here till midnight last night.
All right. Yeah. If you could see one guest on our show, who would it be? But you have to help us get your answer on the show.
You know, I'm a huge Ludacris fan.
We just had him yesterday.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You know, I think Southern, you know, since I grew up, man, I love the Southern rap. I love it. From, you know, from Atlanta down to the bottom. You know, if one guest, I think, you know, I'm sure y'all had Snoop in here. So, you know who, to me, has been missing is I would love to have Uncle Luke in here.
Oh, yeah. Now we need to have Uncle Luke.
You got
to
have Uncle Luke.
I've talked to him a few times. Yeah, we need to have Uncle Luke.
We'll go to Uncle Luke.
I think we need to go to Uncle Luke.
Yeah, because I remember the first time I ever met him was through Vernon Maxwell.
Mad Max.
Of course, we had to roll up in the Rolex. It was just amazing to meet him. And that's one thing about basketball. You're allowed to meet all these people. I remember the first celebrity I ever met was MC Hammer. And this was when he was at the height. Mm-hmm. We watched, he invited us over on New Year's to watch the Alabama-Miami game. Because me and Vernon had a $1,000 bet on that, you know, I was like, damn, I ain't got $1,000 yet, dude, but I bet this. And Alabama actually won that game. So I was like, yes! Yeah, so it was like people like that, man, being in NBA, to be able to just sit down and talk to them and have them be fans of yours. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was standing outside of a restaurant one time and Denzel walks up to me and starts talking to me. Like, man, y'all gonna win this thing this year? I'm like, you know, all you can think about is fucking Denzel talking to me. You know, it's just amazing that they are fans of ours as we are fans of theirs.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, man, we want to thank you first before we give you your merch real quick. Got some All the Smoke merch right here. You can get that at allthesmoke.store.
But
just outside of that, man, just really kind of want to give you your flowers, man. I think your greatness sometimes is overshadowed,
man,
and just limited to shots. But you were a two-way competitor, a monster on both ends, man. And we just want to let you know we appreciate you, man. And I'm glad I ran into him at the airport like a month and a half ago. I was like, bro, when you going to come on? Because we see each other a lot. I'm like, bro, when you going to come on the show?
I didn't think my name was big enough to be on the show.
Yeah, right.
I feel like I was the B team, man, trying to make varsity.
Let
me say something first, man. You know, I have my podcast, but I did my podcast because of you two guys, because, you know, your realness is what's important to me. And I really appreciate your realness, the way y'all talk about people. And y'all just keep it real. You speak from the heart. You know, you can have disagreements with people. Mm-hmm. But you said, okay, that's what's great about this country. You can have different opinions.
Mm-hmm. So, respect remains.
I just said, man, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, man. And I wish y'all nothing but the best, man, because you two deserve it, man.
Appreciate it.
Two of the greatest competitors I've ever seen on the court. Especially you, man. Watching you. People don't understand, man. You know, watching this dude in high school come hang out with Sam. I'm saying, who's this little dude? Oh, he gonna be pretty good, huh? And just, you could see his drive, man, back then, that he wanted to be in it. That's all he talked about. How do I get to the league? I don't think you even remember that, man.
I do. But not just Phoenix, in Houston, too.
Yeah.
At Fundy.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is that when you used to be able to stand your pants up with starch when you was playing?
Yeah, yeah. The real starchy pants back then. Yeah, exactly. That was a Texas thing.
That was a Texas thing.
Starchy boy. Well, Rob, man, we appreciate you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for your time. That's a wrap. Seven-time champ, Robert Horry. All the smoke on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform, Black Effects.
Big shot.
We'll see y'all next week.
Big shot.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.